Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All on mine, shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's care to #250.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's episode is a listener suggestion. Thank you to friend of the show, Anna, for bringing Skylar's story to my attention. Children killing children. These cases are rare but disturbing. And here we have two perpetrators with two very different mindsets, even after incarceration. Should remorse be accepted in sentencing and early parole? Should young offenders receive more lenient sentences because of their youth and immaturity? Should they be allowed to live their lives free while the families of the victims go through lifetimes of grief? I'd be interested to know what you all think. July 2012, Star City, West Virginia. 16-year-old Skylar disappeared without a trace after sneaking out of her home and getting into a vehicle. An exhaustive search commenced over the next several months as police, along with Skylar's friends and family, hoped for her safe return. But she was never seen alive again. Skylar remained missing for nearly a year until shocking evidence brought this missing person's case to a tragic end. This is Skylar's story.
This time of year is particularly hard for the Neese family. What started as a missing persons case turned into their worst nightmare.
In July the 4th, I just start, you know, getting sad and crying. And so it takes a couple of days before I can get over it.
Even after all this time, the family says there's still no relief from the pain. But they hope that Skylar can be remembered for the person that she was and not the tragic circumstances of her passing.
She came in one day and said, "Daddy, I need a piece of bread." And I said, "Honey, what do you need the bread for?" She said, "I'm feeding ants." And I said, "Feeding ants? Don't do that." And she said, "Well, Daddy, they have to eat too." That's the kind of heart she had. It was golden.
Skylar's family says she had aspirations to become a lawyer, that she was headstrong, never backed down in a debate, and had a deep compassion for other people. Michaud says she thinks she would probably be married with a few kids by now. And what's hard for her is knowing that the family will never get to see her go to prom, graduate, or walk down the aisle.
It's hard when you see her friends and everything that they're getting to do, and you know how wonderful their lives are being, and knowing that that was taken away from her.
Skylar Annette Neese was born February 10, 1996, in Morgantown, West Virginia, to parents David and Mary Neese. Skylar would later be described as being very smart and somewhat of an overachiever at school. Skylar would not only be beautiful and popular amongst her peers, but she was also sweet and compassionate, wanting to be a criminal defence lawyer when she grew up so she could fight for the underdog. Skylar's life was not only great at school, but by all accounts, she had a pretty amazing home life too. She would be David and Mary's only child, and she was their entire world. They doted on her, and she got pretty much everything she wanted. Even though Skylar was now in her teens when our story takes place, she hadn't really reached her rebellious stage yet. So the lines of communication between child and parents were fairly open and honest. The family were a close-knit unit. Skylar also had a best friend in Sheila Eddy. The two met when the girls were 8 years old and in elementary school. So, by the time we reached July 2012, the girls had known each other for half their lives. Skylar and Sheila were inseparable. Skylar would come home from school and talk on the phone to Sheila until bedtime, despite seeing each other all day already. They did everything together. Sheila Eddy was born September 28, 1995, in Blacksville, West Virginia, to parents Tara and Greg Eddy. Sheila would later be described as being fun-loving and a silly teenager. She loved to play pranks and make others laugh. Like Skylar, Sheila was an only child, which the girls really bonded over. It was just Skylar and Sheila for many years, until their freshman year at University High School, when a new girl moved to town, Rachel Schoaf. Rachel Schoaf was born June 10, 1996 in Morgantown, West Virginia, to parents Patricia and Russell Schoaf. Rachel would later be described as a people pleaser and religious. Her family were devout Catholics. Rachel loved the theatre and acting, with dreams of becoming a Broadway star when she grew up. Skylar and Sheila quickly accepted Rachel into their friendship circle, and the duo became a trio, sometimes calling themselves the Three Musketeers. It was around this time Skylar's other friends would report her starting to become distant, and she wasn't hanging out with them anymore. This was allegedly due to the three girls drinking and smoking weed, something none of them had done up to this point. Another thing Skylar had started to do was sneaking out of her bedroom at night to go hang out with her friends. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
The three girls were very active on social media, uploading photos almost every day of each other. However, according to friends, there appeared to be something going on behind the camera. Skylar and Sheila were growing apart, and they were starting to argue a lot. This friction in their friendship only increased after Rachel joined their clique. Sheila and Rachel would hang out and not invite Skylar, and when Skylar would later find out about this, she was hurt, understandably. July 5th, 2012. 16-year-old Skylar Neese came home from her shift at Wendy's. Everything seemed normal. She went and had a quick chat with her parents. She told them about her evening and they spoke about theirs. Skylar then said she was tired and wanted to get some sleep, and she went to bed. Everything was fine and nothing seemed amiss. The next day, late morning, David came home on his break from work. You see, there was only one car between him and Skylar, and they'd been letting Skylar use the car when she needed it to get to and from her job. So David came home on his break specifically to get Skylar. She would then drive him back to work, and that way she could have the car to get to Wendy's for her shift. David knocked on Skylar's door and called out her name. As anyone with teenagers know, It can be a struggle to get them to wake up and out of bed in the mornings, and this was summer vacation, so I doubled down on that fact. David tried for several minutes to no avail. Skylar wasn't waking up and her door was locked. He would have been getting frustrated at this point. He only came home for Skylar so she could have the car, and now he was going to be late back to work himself. He had no other option but to break the lock and get into his daughter's room. When David got into Skylar's bedroom, to his horror, Skylar's bed hadn't been slept in and her bedroom window was wide open. David called his wife Mary to find out what he was supposed to do, and hoping that maybe Mary knew something he didn't. Mary kept her composure, trying to calm her husband down and assure him that everything would be okay. That Skylar most likely got up early and went out with some friends to have some fun and enjoy the warm weather before work. Together, David and Mary called around to all of their daughter's friends, including Sheila Eddy. Sheila claimed she had not seen Skylar all day, hadn't heard from her and had no idea where she was. At a loss for what else to do, David went outside for a cigarette to regather his thoughts. It was at this time he saw something peculiar outside Skylar's bedroom window. As I mentioned, her bedroom window was open. But the window was not only open, but there was a stool under her window that Skylar obviously used to climb out the window and left it there so she could climb back in before her parents noticed. Again, Mary was the rational presence. While being annoyed her daughter had been sneaking out of the house, Skylar was also very responsible and she wouldn't miss work for anything. Her shift was due to start at 4 p.m, so they just needed to wait it out until then and call Wendy's to speak to Skylar. But only just a few minutes before this, Skylar's manager actually called her parents to make sure she was still coming to work. This is when panic truly set in. David and Mary were holding onto the hope that Skylar would be at work and they could talk to her, and yes, they would not be happy with her, but at least there would be some relief that she was safe and okay. All they had now were unknowns. Where was Skylar? David and Mary reported 16-year-old Skylar Neese missing to the Star City Police. But unfortunately, as it happens far too often, they at first just think that Skylar's a runaway. Because of this belief, Skylar left on her own volition, no Amber Alert was issued. At this time in West Virginia, they didn't issue Amber Alerts for teenagers until at least 48 hours after they had been missing. Which, as we know, is ridiculous. Those first 48 hours are critical in locating missing persons, and the likelihood of finding a missing person dramatically decreases after that time period has expired. Those first 48 hours can literally be the difference between life and death, between a case being resolved or destined to be a cold case file sitting on a shelf forever. David and Mary really tried to push with the authorities that Skylar would not just run away. That did not make sense. She had a happy home life and she left everything behind. Her phone charger and toothbrush were still there. None of her clothing were missing. The stool under her bedroom window was evidence alone that she intended on returning before either of her parents realised her missing. Later that afternoon, Skylar's parents received a call from Sheila Eddy. She told them she had a confession to make. That she didn't say anything earlier because she did not want to get her friend into any trouble. But now she was actually missing and it was serious, she wanted to tell them. Sheila admitted to sneaking out the night prior, that Sheila was the one to pick Skylar up at 11 p.m. They, along with Rachel Scholf, went for a drive and then about 45 minutes later, Sheila dropped Skylar off a block away from her home. Skylar had asked her to do that so her parents wouldn't hear the car's engines or see the headlights shining. That way she could easily sneak back into her bedroom without anyone being any wiser. At this point, Sheila wanted to be any help she could to show her support. She helped with the search for Skylar and handed out missing persons flyers. She tweeted about how much she wanted her friend to come home, praying alongside her family and offering their support. During one of these initial searches organised by Skylar's parents, remember the police really didn't take any action for the first 48 hours. But David and Mary noticed there were some security cameras at their apartment complex, in the hope something was caught showing what happened between Sheila dropping off Skylar a block away and the short walk back to her bedroom window. The police finally agreed to come to the party and agreed to pull the footage as evidence. in my time doing this podcast. I've seen some really pathetic police work, and this is no exception. I'm not saying if they immediately jumped into action, Skylar would be still alive today, because what we will find out later, that was not possible. Skylar would be dead long before anyone realised her missing. However, if the authorities had been more proactive in their investigation, I doubt it would have taken more than 6 months for them to find her. Regardless, in this CCTV footage, you can see a grainy image of Skylar Neese climbing out of her bedroom window, and she makes her way towards a silver four-door sedan parked on the road. Skylar willingly gets into the vehicle, so it is very clear she wasn't abducted and she was waiting for this person. No make, model or license plate number was visible in the footage. Now this all supported Sheila's version of events, and what she was saying was accepted as truth. This is despite the camera on the footage showing an hour later than Sheila claimed in her story. Unfortunately, however, this just further cemented in the minds of the authorities that Skylar ran away, and they really didn't place any urgency in their investigation. Neighbourhood gossip brought up the scenario that the girls may have went to a party that was taking place that evening with some older kids. It was in the general direction of the one the car was taking in the CCTV footage. And other CCTV cameras on that route also picked up the same silver sedan just after Skylar was seen getting into the vehicle. This raised some suspicions on both Sheila Eddy and Rachel Schulf because they were Skylar's best friends and everyone knew the three of them did everything together. And Sheila openly admitted being the last person who had seen Skylar before she disappeared. So police brought them in for questioning. During police questioning, both girls were cooperative, stating they wanted to help however they could. But what was strange was their stories of what happened that night were identical. Quote, "Their stories were verbatim, the same. No one's stories are exactly the same unless it's been rehearsed. Everything in my gut was Sheila's acting wrong and Rachel is scared to death." Unquote. The girls' cell phones were checked and it was discovered Sheila and Rachel were very active around 4 a.m. on the night Skylar disappeared. Their phone records also showed they were in Blackville, West Virginia. But when questioned, the girls claimed they never went to Blackville. The police started to wonder what the girls were covering up. Not that Sheila and Rachel necessarily did anything to Skylar, but maybe they were covering up for someone else. Like maybe a teenage boy Skylar was secretly seeing. Or maybe she overdosed at the party or had a drunken accident. That's maybe Sheila and Rachel were afraid they were going to get into trouble and they helped hide her body or something. Regardless, the police believed Sheila and Rachel were lying. December 28, 2012. Rachel Schulf had a mental breakdown. At a loss at what to do to help her daughter, Patricia called 911 in distress. Quote, "I have an issue with a 16-year-old daughter of mine. I can't control her anymore. She's hitting us. She's screaming. She's running through the neighbourhood." Unquote. The strain of the guilt of what happened becoming too much for the teen, and she would spend some time in a psychiatric hospital. July 3, 2013. Upon Rachel's release from the hospital, she told her mother she needed to speak to the police, that she had a confession to make. Rachel admitted that she and Sheila stabbed Skylar to death and they planned the whole thing. That on the night of Skylar's disappearance, that Sheila drove to Rachel's house and together they placed a range of items into the trunk of the car. A shovel, cleaning supplies and clean clothes. Sheila and Rachel wearing hoodies despite the warm summer weather in an effort to hide from their friend the knives they were carrying. Just after midnight, they called Skylar to tell her they were coming to pick her up to go smoke pot in the neighbouring town of Brave. And Brave is a town just over the state line of Pennsylvania, an isolated area where the girls would often go and hang out. Now, as we know from the CCTV, Sheila's car was seen picking up Skylar around 12:30, and she runs out from her bedroom window and jumps into the car willingly. And why shouldn't she? Skylar would have been excited if she was asked and may have been hoping this was the turnaround in their friendship. And besides, these were her two best friends and this exact scenario had happened a bunch of times before. Why should this time be different? Except it was. Very different. And Skylar would never return home. The three friends reach their destination and get out of the car in preparation for a few hours of drinking and smoking. On the walk to where they were going to sit, one of the girls realise they forgot their lighter, and they ask Skylar to run back to the car to get it, which Skylar agrees. Again, why wouldn't she? Sheila and Rachel pulled their knives from the pockets of their hoodies and attacked their friend viciously, literally stabbing her in the back. Skylar was a fighter, though, and was not going to go down without a fight easily. Skylar managed to wrestle the knife out of Rachel's hand and she stabbed her in the thigh. At this point, Rachel stops, but not Sheila. She just kept on going. She kept on stabbing Skylar until she was no longer moving, not stopping until she was sure her friend was dead. The girls then got their shovels from the trunk of the car and they started to dig a hole. But then they realised that digging a giant hole big enough to hide a body was not as easy as it looks like on TV, the ground being too hard with rocks. Ultimately, the girls ended up just dumping Skylar's body near the side of the road and covered her with dirt, leaves, boulders and branches. They cleaned all the blood off themselves and their weapons and put everything back in the trunk and they left. It wouldn't be for another 2 weeks until January 16th, 2013, that Rachel led police to the body. It was like they almost didn't believe her until they saw it for themselves. Police were granted warrants to search Sheila's vehicle, a silver Toyota Camry, and they would find blood DNA matching Skylar in the trunk of the car. Sheila never confessed to having any involvement in the murder, even after Rachel spoke to her wearing a wire. However, it wouldn't matter. The investigators had the evidence they needed to arrest and charge both Sheila and Rachel with Skylar's murder. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
May 1st, 2013. Rachel Scholf took a plea deal and pled guilty to second-degree murder by unlawfully, feloniously, willfully, maliciously, and intentionally causing the death of Skylar Neese by stabbing her and causing her fatal injuries. Now remember, it wasn't Rachel who was responsible for the fatal injuries, so this is why second-degree murder was offered to Rachel in the plea deal, and because eventually she was cooperative in locating Skylar's remains. Also taken into consideration in her sentencing was that Rachel showed remorse for her crime. She apologised to the nieces, her own family and God. Rachel was still tried as an adult, and she received a 30-year sentence.
I'm so sorry. I don't know if there's a proper way to make this apology, because there are not even words to describe the guilt and remorse that I feel each day for what I've done. The person that did that was not the real me, not the person I am, not what I'm made of and not what I believe in. I don't think I ever thought that this would actually happen. I became scared and caught up in something that I did not want to do. I never realized the gravity of my actions and how many people I've hurt. I hurt the Neese family and those who love Skylar. I hurt my parents and shamed my family. I hurt my extended family and all of my friends who loved me. I hurt my teachers and those who believed in me. I hurt my church family, my community, and those who trusted me. And I hurt my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. May God bring eternal peace to Skylar and the entire Neese family. Again, I'm so sorry, and I pray each day for everyone involved, and I pray each day for forgiveness.
Yes, Rachel Scholf did tell us where Skylar was. Yes, Rachel Scholf did cooperate. And Rachel Scholf also murdered my daughter in cold blood. Skylar would not be where she was if it wasn't for Rachel Soph. You said yourself, Your Honor, this is first-degree murder. She should not give any leniency, and she can take her apologies and everything else and sit on them because that's about what they're worth to me and my wife. She has done nothing but make our lives a living hell since this day one. She did cooperate in the end because she knew that it was closing in on her, and yes, she would be caught. That's the only reason she feels remorse. Your Honor, I ask you to give her 40 years and plus if you can. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Rachel Soph, for your conviction of the offense of murder in the second degree, the felony charged in the prosecutor's information in this case, it is the sentence of the court that you be imprisoned in the West Virginia State Penitentiary for a period of 30 years.
Sheila Eddy pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and received a life sentence with mercy. And what that means is that instead of being eligible for parole after 20 years, Sheila can apply for parole after 15 years, so in 2028. It is believed that unless she makes massive leaps in her rehabilitation, she won't be granted parole. Sheila showed no remorse at trial or since. During the entire criminal trial, Sheila can be seen smiling, laughing and snickering. Both Rachel and Sheila are being held at the Larkin Correctional Center in West Columbia, West Virginia. May 1st, 2023. Rachel Soph had her first parole hearing, and now was the first time we really got a motive for why the girls did what they did. Allegedly, Rachel and Sheila were in a romantic relationship and Skylar found out. And despite Skylar never threatening to do so, from all that I read in my research, Skylar was a very compassionate young woman, and I believe she would have been fully supportive and happy for her friends. But Rachel and Sheila were allegedly worried that Skylar would tell everyone about their secret romance, so they plotted to murder her. Rachel's parole application was denied. She remains behind bars until she again applies for parole, or until her projected release date in April 2028.
But Skylar's legacy doesn't just live on in memory. It also lives on in Skylar's Law, which expanded the Amber Alert system to include children who might not be abducted, but are in clear danger. According to Tom Bloom, who advocates for the law, it helped find dozens of children in West Virginia and was enacted in other states. Dave Neese and Bloom are working together to take the law to the national stage.
If the kid's never done it, in Skylar's case, never run away, never had a problem with her, and bam, they're missing. That's a problem. And if we have something like the Skylar Alert, we can at least send it out.
And Skylar's parents also started Skylar's Promise. Skylar's killers allegedly plotted the murder in school, which students overheard. Skylar's Promise urges kids to go to a responsible adult if they hear something dangerous.
We never want anyone to go through what we went through. If it can be avoided, please avoid it. It's the worst hell I've ever been through, okay? And I wouldn't wish what I went through on my worst enemy. And I don't ever want anybody else to go through it.
Skylar's Law was passed in West Virginia in 2013. It expanded on the existing Amber Alert system to include children who are in danger, not just in the cases of child abduction. Since then, this positive change in legislation has potentially saved the lives of dozens of children. To help deal with their grief, David and Mary Neese founded an outreach organisation, Skylar Talks. They visit schools and prisons to help others understand how their actions can cause pain that extends far beyond the victim of crime. David and Mary are also advocates for See Something, Say Something, speaking to children and teens about Skylar's Promise, a commitment made by young people to say something if they believe something is wrong. Quote, "It's so important to me that this never happens again to anyone. It's the most horrible thing I've ever been through. I don't want anyone else to go through it. I wouldn't wish it on the two people that put me through it." Unquote. Skylar never got the chance to become a criminal defence lawyer like she aspired to be. But through Skylar's Law and the tireless work her parents are achieving, she has saved the lives of many, even though she isn't here to witness it. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives underscore stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.